It is time for Main Street Magazine on Robin Hood Radio with Thorne Christian Dyer. Thorne, good morning and happy July 5th.
Happy July 5th to you, too.
We had a nice string of weather, actually. I only had that one night where we had thunderstorms. Everything else worked out pretty nice for a great holiday weekend.
It has been fantastic weather.
All right. Well, hey, speaking about fantastic, this is the Fantastic Food Edition, right?
It is. It came out last Friday, and Libby and Ashley have been busy getting it out Friday and into the weekend.
All right. Now, we're not going to start off with food. We're going to start off with the Wasaic story on the Wasaic Project.
A tournament. Yep, our artist profile.
Yep. A Tournament of Lies.
That's the name of the show that's going on right now. And Betsy gives, in this article, gives an overview of the background of a little bit of the Wasaic Project for those who aren't familiar, and then about specifically about this show that's going on right now and some of the artists and some of the inspiration, and explains the setup of multiple floors at the Wasaic Project and what kind of you can expect on some of them.
You know, I remember when they were just talking about getting converting that old mill, when there was a tree growing out of the mill.
And oh, my gosh.
It's absolutely amazing what they've done there. And also, I think it's so great the way the town and the area have accepted it, and its growth is absolutely amazing. And the shows they put on and the workshops they put on are truly spectacular.
It is. Everything I've heard about them has been fantastic. We had a story on many years ago, not that long after they opened there. And I was speaking to the couple who run the Wasaic Lantern not too long ago, and they were saying how amazing the project is there and what impact it has had on the community, and just the amazing amount of people that come through, and how fascinating and creative they are.
I always liked it up until we had COVID, but it'll probably be back this year when they used to have their big summer exhibition and they would have a festival. The 20 to 30-year-olds that came up on the train and walked and spent the whole weekend camping up at the Wasaic. It was always amazing to see how many people from New York come up to these shows, as well as regional people as well, the Wasaic Project. Nice story here on Scottish spirits.
Yeah, that's our entrepreneur feature that Christine Bates did, and she interviewed John Dyson of 10 Mile River Distillery in Wasaic as well, so a little bit of Wasaic start to the magazine down there.
You know, what's interesting about the distilleries, of course, we have Berkshire Mountain Distillers up in Sheffield, which has been around for about, I think, 15 years now. And it's amazing what they can do and the spirits that they can make. They're just coming off this the one up in Sheffield, where they took nationally known beer and made mm-hmm. spirits out of the beer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I think it's so interesting, and I didn't realize we had one as close as Wasaic as well, but it's so interesting about the development. Everybody talks about cannabis and stuff like that, but the facilities of making spirits around this area have also just increased amazingly in the past couple of years.
They have, my husband and I actually were at a Dutchess County Land Conservancy event about a month ago. That was our road rally that ended at 10 Mile River, and I had their gin, and it was delicious. It was and some of the drinks that they were having there, but the facility itself is gorgeous. And the people there were super nice and informative, and you know, seeing how they kind of make the things there, and the bar that they've set up, and just, you know, if you want to have a conference or whatever down there, it's absolutely a gorgeous spot for it.
All right, now when I looked at your picture, I guess that is strawberry shortcake, the picture on the front page, right?
For the recipe?
Yeah.
Yep, strawberry shortcake, but the cover is a something pavlova, if I remember correctly, that Libby also made.
All right, well, let's talk about the strawberry shortcake.
Well, as Libby and her daughter explained, that the month of July is a very special month for their family, a lot of birthdays, and so when Libby's girls were growing up, they always had a dessert for dinner, I guess, for one of their birthdays, and this was one of their favorites, so not just, you know, that it's summer and the strawberries are, you know, beautiful right now, but they, this is one of their favorites to make the strawberry shortcake. And the recipe doesn't sound too difficult, actually. So I was like, oh, maybe I could even make that. But it looks beautiful. And Libby said it's so good.
Well, basically, when you use strawberry shortcake, if you can make pound cake, or you can make any type of, really, any type of yellow cake that you want, once you make the cake, then adding the strawberries and all the cream and everything else is just the cherry on top of the and you're right, you do have a very easy recipe to follow to make pound cake. And the great thing about that pound cake recipe is, yes, you can make strawberry shortcake, but there's nothing like a piece of pound cake sliced, toasted with some butter on it.
Oh, really? I haven't tried that.
Oh, my gosh. It's like you went to heaven and came back. It's obviously not the healthiest thing in the world for you, but it is so good. You just get it, so you brown the pound cake, and you put right away, put some butter on it. Oh, well, anyways, I'll stop talking now about that.
I'll have to tell Libby that. She'll have to try it next time, too.
All right. Your next story is the I love this, the importance of being frank, the Frank Food Company.
Yeah. Yeah, CB did a little bit of a profile restaurant review of Frank Food Company that are in, what is it, West Cornwall?
West Cornwall. They used to be in Kent, but then they're now in West Cornwall.
And it's, you know, to typical CB fashion, does a fantastic job where you kind of feel like you got to know the person he's talking about, which is Frank in this case. And it gives a little background about him and how it is that he opened a restaurant that is now located in West Cornwall, and the kind of drive and the type of food and the ambience of the place there.
All right. Now, this is the next story we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this week and next week, because it's an important story, and it's mm-hmm. about an important function. And that is, after 2 years of an absence, the Jane Lloyd Fund lobster and clam bake is back. It's held at Satry Hill, and it's just an unbelievably great event.
It is. Regina spoke with Caroline Birchfield and wrote this piece up about that, talking a little bit about the history of it, who Jane Lloyd was, the reason that they started the fund and what it does in our community, and then specifically about the clam bake itself and how it helps to raise funds, and in addition to being just a great event for people to get together in the region.
You know, and what's great about it is that their initial concept, where they raise funds for families that are stricken with cancer, for things other than cancer treatment. It's you spend so much money on the cancer treatment that they supply money for the other things that you don't have money for. That's the basic premise of it. And what's great about the clam bake is that tickets are $70, and you can get them online. You can go through the Berkshire Taconic Foundation, and you can get a digital ticket, or else you can use phone numbers, which you can get a hold of, which you can find at the JaneLloydFund.org website. But they sell 250 tickets for the clam bake, and that's all. But you can go to the clam bake. You don't have to buy a ticket. You're just not going to partake in the clams and the lobster. They have hot dogs and hamburgers for sale. Harney Teas will be there. I mean, they have music entertainment. And so you can just go make a donation if you want. You don't have to have the lobsters or the clams. And you spend several hours there. And there's always people you know there. And it's all for a great cause. It really. And if you get there early enough and hang out, you'll actually see them make the pit and start the fire and start it, and then you see them when it comes out. It really is a whole amazing affair. It's how they do it, I just don't know, but they've got so many volunteers that help out. It's just a real, real good time.
It is, and the volunteers, as I said, we spoke with Caroline Birchfield, and they're so passionate about this and helping the folks who they the fund benefits, and the importance of this for the community.
You know, every year I interview a couple of the founders of it, and the last 2 years. But you know what's great? In the last 2 years, even though it's a major fundraiser for them, the community really chipped in and helped them so they could meet their goals and meet the needs, and while the fundraiser couldn't be held. And that tells you just tons about the community that we live in.
It does.
Let's go to the final story we'll talk about today by Mary O'Neill, The Family That Eats Together.
Well, since it's our food and drink issue, we thought it, you know, would be interesting to have a little thing about, you know, eating together. But, you know, joking aside, Mary actually sent me an article yesterday about someone who was talking about this similar thing in regards to mental health. And, you know, but Mary, you know, I thought it would be interesting to have that and talk about the importance of a family that sits down and actually communicates and eats together. And she references her own family. She has three children that are now mostly adults. And but she talked about her perspective with it and what they, you know, no tech, they would sit down, they would talk about their day and just that moment of connection. And she even gives a few tips about what to do and, you know, when you sit down and topics of conversation.
Well, I'm 69, and we as a family used to sit down, my mother, my father, my grandmother, okay, my uncle, my aunts, my brothers, my sisters, and we'd sit around and we'd have dinner every night. And it would be a dinner that would start off with either soup or salad, a course, and then dessert. And you spent 2.5 to 3 hours together as a family. And in that 2.5, finally we did outlaw talking about politics and the Vietnam War.
Right.
But other than that, it was always a great time. And that extended out to the extended family, where every year the family, 55 to 60 people would get together twice a year in the summertime. And you'd rotate houses anywhere between New Jersey, New York City, and in Connecticut. And you'd have these big family functions. And life is totally different today. It's not necessarily built around the family center, and that's a shame, because really, if you read this article, it really was an amazing time to sit with your family, and know what everybody's doing. It's just
exactly.
Yeah. So it's a great story. It brought back a lot of memories. A lot of memories.
Good. Good.
Especially my mother could only make two things. My grandmother always was the one who cooked. My mother could only make Hawaiian chicken,
okay,
and peppered steak.
Okay.
Other than that, my mother couldn't make anything. She's a terrible cook, but those two things she could make. But thank goodness my grandmother saved the day. But it was always nice, those family dinners. Well, just some of the stories you'll find in the food edition of Main Street Magazine on your newsstands now. And, of course, free pickup. And also you can take a look at the companion website, mainstreetmag.com. Thorin, we'll speak to you again next week.
Sounds terrific.
Take care.
Bye.
Thorin Christendotter and Main Street Magazine here on Robin Hood Radio. Once again, mainstreetmag.com for the version that's on the internet. And you can pick up Main Street Magazine for free at lots of locations throughout our tri-state region, and at mainstreetmag.com on the web.